Bells have played an important part in the history of civilizations. They've sounded the time of day, called people together, announced the opening and closing of stock markets, marked events such as weddings and funerals, and functioned as civic alarms during times of trouble. Eventually, bells were also used for music, and that tradition continues today. WRTI's Susan Lewis went to the top of three Philadelphia area towers to investigate the carillon, a musical instrument made up of many bells.
The ringing of bells is common enough. But not all bell sounds are made the same way. There are swinging bells and stationary bells, electronic bells and super bells, or rather, sets of bells played together on an instrument known as a carillon, played here by Lisa Loney for a recording at Longwood Gardens. Carillon is most often at the top of a tall tower, and there's only one way to get there, whether you begin from a center city square.
It's a lot of steps, and it gets narrow and tricky.
On the streets of a city neighborhood.
1798, the church was founded. 1796.
Or on a leafy suburban hillside.
I love these stairs because they're worn from people going up and down it since the 18-somethings, 1880s.
At the top of the tower, anywhere from 23 to 77 stationary cast bronze bells are suspended on a large frame, often in a partially enclosed bell chamber. Each bell clapper is connected by a wire to what looks like an organ console, sort of. The keys, instead of ivories, are wooden handles called batons, and a carillonneur, like Lisa Loney, based at St. Thomas Whitemarsh, doesn't tickle them with her fingertips.
They're struck with the closed fist or the open hand. The lower bells, which may be a little bit more difficult to play because you're moving a clapper that might be about 500 or 600 pounds, are played with the feet.
The bells themselves are even heavier. Above the bustling streets of the Germantown section of Philadelphia, carillonneur Janet Tebble takes us up the steps from the playing room into the actual bell chamber of the First United Methodist Church.
Watch out, don't bump your head or bump your feet and go over there.
So we're walking under this giant bell. How big is this bell?
About 1¾ tons.
1¾ tons?
Yeah. This baby over here is 3½ tons. This is called the bourdon, B-O-U-R-D-O-N. It's a French word that we borrowed. It means the lowest bell of a set of bells.
Tebble speaks with pride and affection for these bells she plays.
So I love being up here because of all these big bells. Now, we have five bells that are bigger than the Liberty Bell. Our fifth bell is the size is the Liberty Bell. There's the Liberty Bell over there. That's an E-flat.
Because bells vibrate in circles and a single bell with its curving profile produces a tone and various overtones, each bell in a carillon must be in tune with itself, and then in tune with the other bells, which also have to be the same profile, or shape and material.
Otherwise, it would be like playing a melody plucked on a viola and tooted on an oboe and blasted on a trumpet. You have to have a style that matches, and the same mix of bell bronze and the same profile of bell and everything else.
The result is an instrument of great power, played with a lot of physical activity. Here's what it sounds like from up in the tower when Janet Tebble plays Sparocchia by Jeff Rotiers. Lisa Loney finds playing the carillon quite a workout.
The hands are flying, the feet are going at a rapid pace, and we're usually working up the sweat. It's not pretty to watch, but it's, I think, a really beautiful instrument from the ground.
From the ground is where we usually listen to the bells, and carillon recitals are inevitably open-air events. Learning and practicing, by the way, for the sanity of the neighborhood, takes place on a practice console not hooked up to the bells. The music, even of a familiar tune, is distinctive.
And if you think of an organ in an orchestra hall, the organist stops playing, he lifts his hands, and you have that very slight decay of a couple of seconds as the sound reverberates. With the carillon, you have enormous decay. And that's going on and on and on. So when we either arrange for carillon or compose from carillon, we have to be very cognizant of that decay and that we don't have dissimilar notes crashing in on each other.
Carillons date from the 1500s in the Low Countries of Europe, mainly Belgium, Holland, and northern France, which, along with England, are still where most bells are made. Janet Teble says bells were extremely important to a town.
And if a king wanted to show a town that they had fallen out of favor, they would take away their bells. And during World War II, when the Germans came in and took a lot of the Belgian and Dutch bells, that was just a horrible, horrible insult. And many bells were secreted away in the middle of the night and sunk down into canals and dug down into crypts, and we're still finding them, actually.
Carillons became popular in America in the early 1900s. From its beginnings in Europe and through the years, repertoire evolved from folk tunes to music composed specifically for carillons to contemporary compositions and arrangements in many styles, including jazz and pop. Today, Lisa Loney says the Delaware Valley tri-state area, including Princeton and Longwood Gardens, has the largest concentration of carillons in the United States. The Church of the Holy Trinity on Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia has the oldest manually played carillon in North America. Organist and choirmaster John French says it was installed in 1882.
The bells were cast in Belgium. They were inspected by a very famous Victorian composer at the time, Sir John Stainer, who passed off on the bells and pronounced them healthy and a good set.
Carillon playing had a revival in the early 20th century. Although it's not the easiest instrument to build, install, and maintain, Loney says her repairman comes from the Netherlands. Today, carillons do exist all over the world, including relatively new ones in Japan. Some carillons, like the one at Holy Trinity on Rittenhouse Square, have the option of electronic mechanisms.
15 years ago, the bells were in a state of disrepair and really could not be played. The bells were actually taken out of the tower and refinished and restored, and the tower was, put into good shape. They were also modernized at the time so that they could be played mechanically as well as being played manually. Since we don't have somebody who goes up to the tower 3 times a day to play the instrument.
Although for most people, it's not a full-time gig. You get the sense that running up there is part of the fun of being a carillonneur.
And I love being up above the city, and I know that it's been like this since 1927, and then I have buddies all over the world who get to hang out in carillon towers too.
I'm above the tree line. It's just being inside your instrument that you play. I think it's kind of heavenly. I don't know. It's really great. I like it a lot.
There is clearly joy in this pursuit close to the heavens, making what is perhaps the ultimate musical public art, connecting with tradition, with these massive bells, and with the world on the ground. A carillonneur never knows who might be listening, whether they plan to or not.